Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Would you wear your Kildare jersey in Tenerife, for example?
No.
You wouldn't?
Under any circumstances.
Why not, though? You're not proud of
Kildare tattoos, you know.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's sports breakfast show.
Anna Capeless, good morning to you. How are you?
Good, lads. How are you?
When I think you were flying during the game, so when you watched it back, what was it like?
Which game are you talking about now? Because I was actually flying during the AIL final.
Oh, sorry. It was the Ireland game. No, you watched the Ireland game live then. Grand. So,
yeah.
Right. Very good.
So, yeah, I was able to... Big weekend just in general. I was pinching myself still this morning when I woke up on numerous fronts. But in terms of Ireland, like, do you know, I felt a little bit like you do on Stephen's Day. Do you know when you get a new toy for Christmas when you're a kid? And then you wake up on Stephen's Day and you're like, you remember that you got a new toy and you relive that feeling all again. That's what I was like on Sunday morning, waking up, having a moment just lying in the bed and then being like, oh my God. God, I cannot believe we have qualified for the World Cup. I did not think I'd be, you know, we'd be feeling this way so soon. I think it was a matter as well of trying to put it to one side just to focus on things like performance and progression. But like coming into this, you know, we knew this was a possibility, but to have achieved it, oh my God, like I couldn't be happier for the girls. It's just unreal to come out third in this championship this time round.
Talk to us a little bit about what they would have been going through this week after the annihilation against England at Twickenham.
Yeah, so hard to begin to analyse it. I know we spoke last week and there's only so much you can kind of delve into it. And as a squad, how do you pick yourself up and what bits do you look at and what bits you don't? It's actually great now that I kind of felt like, do you know what, let's just throw that English game in the bin because it won't serve us on many fronts. But now is when we can start looking at that English game and analysing it and looking into it and doing our proper homework on that English game now, because we know we're going to be in WXV1. That's the stuff we've got to sort out now. In terms of preparing for the Scotland game, I think it would have been a kind of exciting week, like very reminiscent of, you know, 2 years ago when Ireland beat Scotland in Belfast in the last game. And, you know, a few of those girls were there and played that day and dug their heels in. So it was very similar fashion to 2 years ago. So I think they drew on that a lot. Again, something we kind of touched on last week when we were talking about the game was like, if you were missing tackles in that English game, which a lot of girls did and on many occasions, way you're going to be missing tackles again. Like it has less to do with confidence and more to do with putting things right. So actually, if you're mindset, you come into that Irish game being like, wait, to put right my wrongs personally and as a team. So, you know, all in all, it kind of maybe came at a good time where everyone's just absolutely seeing red because of the errors and because of the scoreline and because of the feeling after the English game. So actually, it worked out really well.
The things that had been true the previous week about the side being well coached and understanding what the game plan was and having a clarity of vision, that seemed to disappear in England. And like that can't happen to a team. If it happens against a world-class side like England, that's when the real damage gets done.
Absolutely. And like, you know, a lot of the same errors happened on Saturday as well. You know, poor decision making, like basic errors, like it wasn't a perfect performance by any means. Like, my God, how marginal it is that we have qualified for the World Cup and we've qualified for WXV1. Like literally just on almost small technicalities that we're in and another team isn't. Like that's so, it's not like they absolutely, you know, marched through every team and they, you know, they're in the right place in WXV1. Like this is going to be hard. This is really, really hard for them, but it's still the best place in which they can be. But you're right. We've got to get that right. Decision-making, like scenarios, there's only so much homework you can do in a Six Nations campaign without overwhelming players. Too much information can be just as bad as not enough information. There's a lot of work to do. But, you know, parts of it are there and they exist in a really strong form, which is really nice. Like, good, you know, we know our strengths now in terms of like Dan O'Brien, the players in the back row, like Enya Breen, like so much, there's so much there to build off, as well as then the co-captaincy and the leadership of getting Tina Maloney back in. Like there's so many good things there. It's a great place to be building from. But you're right. Yeah, God, there's an awful lot of work to do. And if you look at Wales, who went into WXV1, lost everything, didn't perform well, and then continued that downward streak throughout this tournament. Like that's poor Wales have been the first ones. There's a lot to learn from their situation now. Like we cannot make the same mistakes. The head has to be down, working hard. The set piece has to be sorted out. To be saying, okay, who is the best line-out coach in the country? We need you. We need to work with you for a little while. Work with the players, the coaches across the board. The line-out needs to improve like tenfold.
Yeah, that's a cautionary tale, isn't it? What happened to Wales getting slightly overpromoted a little bit ahead of time. So that's the other side of this, that really Irish rugby needs to take that example and invest every single penny they possibly can in making sure that the same thing doesn't happen to us now.
Absolutely, especially this year, like going into the World Cup, there was almost, I don't know, it's really hard to know. Like, I don't know if you saw Ewan Cunningham, like the Wales head coach, like after full time, and Wales finally ground out a win. You know, I was delighted for them. He was like unbelievably emotional in the stand when they won. Like, he could barely lift his head. And he was completely in floods of tears. Like, it's not just going to serve now. Oh, great, we've given out contracts, that'll sort everything. No, it's not just like, you know, putting a Band-Aid over a wound. Like, there has to be proper investment. Okay, like, on every front, where can we improve? Like, what coaches are available? What extra players are available in terms of, like, how we build the squad, how we grow the squad, how we, you know, make sure that the players that are there aren't getting comfortable. And I don't mean that in a, you know, threatening their position all the time. Like, you have to be, like, confident in your ability, but also have other players push you, younger players coming in, experienced players who are in form coming back in. I know we will kind of get on to talk a little bit about the AIL as well, but that's, you know, that was a great showcase on Sunday and like something that, you know, needs to be used, that other talent, wider talent that exists outside the squad needs to be hot on their heels. They need to be hot on the heels of the girls that are already there. There's no comfort in this now. There's a long year ahead. If we want to come out of this World Cup, like happy and feeling like, yes, this has all been worth it.
What about in terms of the player pool? Is that close to being maximised at this point?
Probably not. You know, the contracts that are there, there's some players on contracts from the last cycle as well. So I'm sure Scott Beaman has his own ideas on how he would like to grow his own squad. I'm sure it can be grown and altered and you know, built up. Again, they have to be out scouting. They've got to be down at the AIL games, the Interpros. The kind of frustrating thing now is that, like, the final of the AIL was at the weekend. So now these Irish players, only if you're in the Premiership, do you get to go back to your club and kind of, like, kick on. I mean, there's no greater feeling than going back to your club after a Six Nations. You know, the Irish girls that aren't in the Prem now, but they're just going back into camp. You need to be playing. And, like, how... You know, for example, the decision making that, you know, we're not great at the moment. Like, if you think of the amount of scenarios you're presented with week in, week out, when you play league, looking at the Prem as an example, and it's a good example to use because we have a model of it that exists here in Ireland and we're not using it to we're not using it as best we can, in my opinion. You know, week in, week out, being presented with scenarios, you've got, you know, 10 teams in the AIL, you could have 10 groups of leaders across those teams, like leadership, decision-making scenarios, referees, conversations with referees, like things you come up against week in, week out in the league that the English girls do in the Premiership. And then that's what you bring into the Irish squad. You know, I feel, you know, a question about the player pool, it exists in the AIL, you know, and it can be extended, absolutely, if we just dig deeper into the AIL.
There's a danger that we just apply the structures that we have in the men's game to the women's game and go, oh, it's worked for them and it's going to be the same thing, as opposed to saying, well, actually, the men's game is obviously completely juiced by the school system, where that's where the massive amount of investment comes, and that's private money that doesn't exist in the women's game. And so we need to have a completely different approach to it.
100%. And I want to see the school system for girls, like, you know, kick on as well. But that's longer term. Like, if that starts to kick on, we won't see the results of that for another, you know, 10 years. But
do we, though? Like, if you were to start again, I'm not sure that's putting all the power in the hands of 5 or 6 or 8 schools is actually the way to go, when you could use the clubs, which are community based, as the be all and end all for the women's game.
Absolutely. And yeah, I'm only saying that because I want just more playing opportunities for the girls who are in these schools, who are watching the boys going out to train, and the boys are in the gym and the girls don't get anything. I completely agree with you that the clubs and the community is the way forward for the women's.
None of the rich schools are mixed, though. They're all like, you know.
But it is a good base. Like, it is a good, like, opportunity for girls in school to be playing. No, I don't. It's not going to work for the women's game, this rich, like, you know, private investment. It's not going to work. But I want to see more school girls rugby. That's only a simple, like,
yeah,
thing
no, fair
to
enough.
Do. But
if you, yeah.
But I completely agree with you. Like, the pathway is the clubs, and like the, you know, if you look at like the model of the Prem, and like I can. You know, I don't want to keep harping on about the Premiership, but it is the best league in the world. We have have like a mini model of it here in Ireland, and we're just seem to be not using it, like I said, to our best abilities. Each Premiership side has a centre of excellence. They've got under 18 squads that are being, you know, that's one of the criteria. You need a centre of excellence, which is like a training academy for younger players. And then that feeds into the Premiership sides. That also feeds into like coaching opportunities for senior players in those clubs. So not only are you growing players, you know, experience, you're growing coaches' experience as well, which the women's game needs more and more of. Then you look at like how, you know, in Ireland, we seem to be going after this challenge format and the Interpros format. But no other country like Scotland and Wales, who will also be taking part in, you know, in the Challenge Cup, who we seem to be kind of coming to their level, they don't have a system like we have in terms of the AIL. Like, it exists for us already. This isn't a ground up thing. Like, it's there. It's just such a shame that, like, you know, you look at the brilliant final that we had yesterday in Dublin, in the Aviva Stadium. How brilliant would it have been if that included all of the girls who played on Saturday as well, plus all the girls who are chasing them for their jerseys, you know, and you can see them pipped against each other, like in the best way possible, like across the domestic league. And like, I've played in the Premiership and I've played in the AIL, and I'm telling you how valuable the AIL is. And we just, you know, and you're going, talking about the men's structure, that also seems to be the way we're going after it in terms of, you know, the provinces. Like, let's use what's already there. It's easier to play for your club as well, because we're not full-time players. The girls aren't full-time players. So you can't, you know, if you're playing for Munster, like my biggest memory of being an amateur player and playing for Munster is driving a lot of time on the road, because, you know, it's drawing girls from all over the province. That's a lot of time commitment that you don't need to put into your club.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just one very simple thing. There's so many strands to it. And I just, yeah, it's funny how closely I feel like the Ireland coming out of this Six Nations could benefit so much from an AIL league. And we just had the final as well on Sunday. So a lot of things to draw on there together.
A brief word on the final. It finished 48-38 for UL Bohemians against Railway Union. And it sounds like it was a remarkable game.
Yeah. So that was the thing. I had to avoid like looking at the result on my phone, because I had just come off the flight. So I just had my eyes like glued to the second half. God, it was brilliant. You know, it's very, very wide pitch, obviously, and I don't think the players were kind of used to that. There was a lot of kind of squandered opportunities in terms of like getting the ball wide and wasting overlaps from both sides, because I think they just weren't used to the width of the pitch. But my goodness, like the grit from you elbows to dig in. Like there's a lot of emotional, you know, feeling behind it in terms of like senior players last games, like Fiona Reid played her last game for you elbows. We lost a wonderful club man in John Keane during the year who would have, you know, his favourite thing was supporting Bose, and to see Bose win an AIL would have meant everything to him. So that was very charged. And I think they used that, you know, this great leadership there in terms of like Chloe Pierce and the young girls like Chisholm Aguero. And we're going back to again kind of the AIL and Ireland kind of link here. But she said she won player of the match. She scored some unbelievable tries. She said in her post-match interview that like she was brought in so late that she had to have the plays written on her hand because she's been in the Irish squad. You know, it's just such a shame. Like imagine the level she could get to if she'd been there, you know, all season, and it was managed a bit better in terms of like pulling your players out of the AIL and then putting them back in when they're not selected for Ireland. Like it just, it's been like that for years, and it's really hard to manage, you know. So brilliant game. I absolutely delighted for Bose. I was a mess. I had to go out then to the top 14 game last night to watch La Rochelle dramatically beating Toulouse, and I couldn't cope. So I need a break from rugby now. Well, for a few hours before I go back to training this evening, but yeah, big weekend.
A quick word on Lindsay Peat rolling back the years, or still doing her thing. Amazing.
Oh yeah. Oh no, like she'll be doing that for the next 10 years as well. She's unbelievable. Like she, you know, and it's nice to see her play number 8 because she you know, she's able to just get a bit more time on the ball and launching herself forward. Like you elbows did really well to deal with her, but just seeing her like run up the pitch as if she was, you know, one of the young sparks in her 20s. But what is she now? 50 plus? No, I'm joking. She's she'll keep going. Like she's amazing. She's in brilliant shape. It's really nice to see that because, you know, personally now coming into my older years, you know, people are trying to retire you all the time, like, oh, are you still playing? It's like, oh, look at Lindsay Peat, you know, look what she's able to do. So it's really nice to see that she's a legend.
A big win for La Rochelle. They beat Toulon last night, back into the top 6.
Oof, they made hard work of it. It was brilliant. Lot on the line for them now. They've got to dig deep. It's just so brilliant. Like every match is like that in Stade Marcel de Flandre. Like just the atmosphere and the support from the locals, it means so much to them. I'd love to see them do well now in the top 14, given that their Champions Cup is gone and they lost the final last year in top 14. Like it'd just be brilliant for them, for the town, for everyone involved. Like I just, you know, they're leaving it a bit late, but sure, you know, coming from a Munster head, you know, it's never too late really to start pulling out performances. So yeah, like if they can just keep the heads down now and get a few more results, a few more bonus points, it'd be brilliant.
One quick word about Fiona Hayes as well. It's her first full season back coaching UL Bows. Definitely needs to have a central role in the future of Irish rugby, it feels like, as an outsider watching.
Yeah, and I'd agree with that, obviously from a very biased point of view, because she's a very good friend of mine, old teammate. So I'm glad that you said that, because you've just taken the words out of my mouth. She's brilliant. The players love her. She's a wonderful nature about her. Like, and you know, she's put her time in. She's come from the bottom up in terms of coaching, and you know, she's fantastic. And I'm just so delighted for her that they were able to get the win as well. You know, I met her during the week, and I hadn't seen her so stressed in a while. She's not like that usually. You know, she doesn't get stressed. She's very, very calm and you know, very confident in what she does. But she was nervous for the final, I think, you know, big occasion in the Aviva and everything that I spoke about that was already on the line. Like she did an unbelievable job. I'm so delighted for her. And you're absolutely right. Yeah, she needs to be kept.
Anna, great stuff. Thanks a million for joining us. Cheers.
Thanks, lads. Talk to you soon.
Off the Ball Breakfast.
Ireland's Sports Breakfast Show.